we're back with an all-new Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III.
I'm birthday boy Louis Fertel.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, it's Louis's birthday. He's turning 86, guys, which makes him the same age as, like, Shirley MacLaine. That's okay. Happy birthday, Louis, and my name is Aida Osman.
Thank you, Aida.
Yes, we're supposed to say happy birthday to you, bitch.
I know. It was coming, too. I had a whole thing. I was going to commend you, but here you go.
Truly was coming. You couldn't wait.
Nope.
Now you've ruined it.
I know you hate astrology, but you are more and more Leo every time you speak. I'm just saying.
That is not untrue. No. I accept my fate. And again, I have the Leo condition of believing Leo is the only sign that means anything. Ugh. So I know astrology is a little bit true. I'm turning 34 and my references are turning 175. So
yes,
enjoy.
Exactly. But happy birthday to our white prince, second only to Timothée Chalamet.
Oh, wow. You're right. I like being a runner-up to him.
That's it.
I have a lot of other white princes.
Oh, really?
Maybe that's part of the problem.
See?
You need to cut off some white princes.
I'm going to say, you need to come to the red table to talk about the white prince problem in your life.
But yes, for your birthday, I'm going to be replaying that viral video of you on Jeopardy, like, for 10 hours straight.
I was talking with Aida about that video earlier when I was on Jeopardy, got a daily double snapped. I would like to say, like, oh, what a kitschy moment you caught of me on camera. Actually, no, nothing could be more telling about me. It literally is definitive of who I am. Just keep watching that. Yeah.
The competitiveness, the narcissism, like, it's the confidence I crave and wish I had.
You know what I'm going to do, Aida? I'm going to send you some YouTube links to Louis's old video series.
Oh, that Adam Rippon brought up, Verbal Voguing. Yes. You'll learn about
it. It was called Verbal Voguing?
Verbal Voguing, child. The gayness jumped out.
If I were to host that show now, might not call it Verbal Voguing, whatever.
Maybe.
But you will see, Aida Osman, in terms of profanity and quote-unquote going there, maybe our brands overlap more than you think.
Okay, Louis, I really want to see that. I want the perversion. I want it.
She really did light up just now. It was frightening. Yeah.
His hair at that point, too, was a marvel.
Well, I noticed it, like, literally was like Newton's fourth law, the way it defied gravity and physics. Yes. And all types. So, like, I need to understand how you got it to be that high.
I really did a Jimmy Neutron thing for a long, long time. So
you really did. Yeah. And it was him talking about pop culture and, you know, making snappy comments and many of the references that he makes now. But more wild. Louis is toned down.
Thank God. Thank God we have Keep It so we can temper him and tone him, because this is like,
right.
You just free range Lewis? No.
Wow.
Yeah, you're getting adult contemporary Lewis right now. Before, yes. It was like gritty R&B Lewis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's bouncing off black people with sense.
See?
With sense.
Sure. Keeping me in line.
I feel like you were still making those videos when I met you.
Yeah, I did it. I only did like 12 or 13 of them, but I probably did it well into 2012. So I think I knew you then. Yeah, that makes sense. But that was the reason anything happened to me. I was like a blogger at a bunch of places that don't exist anymore. And then I started making videos, and then I got on like Chelsea Lately, and then I wrote for Billy on the Street. And now I'm here with you guys, delivered to listeners.
Delivered. we have an exciting episode just for Louis's birthday.
Truly.
Yes. We have Bob the Drag Queen joining us.
Legend. I watched that season with bated breath every week. He was constantly hilarious. In a way, few queens are on the show, I hate to say. Like, really, truly consistent.
Maybe you can show Bob some of your Verbal Voguing videos.
Oh, I'm sure he's quite familiar. I'm kidding. There's no way he's familiar.
They were also formative to him as a queer youth, just like Adam Rippon. Also, we're going to get into this Ellen business.
If she still has one. If she still has an Ellen business.
Also, there are layers to this. Like, the versions of exposés that have come out, each one deserves
Truly.
Its own repulsed reaction.
Yeah. There have been updates within the hour, too, so I might have to be Googling while we record. There are things
yes.
coming out.
Yeah. We may just have to launch a Keep It Ellen edition. Where every day there's a daily update to what's going on with Ellen DeGeneres.
We can call it Ellen Not So Generous.
Mm. There we see.
Thank you.
Executive producer Aida Osman.
But before that, we're going to talk about some culture, including Black is King from the Beyoncé. We'll be right back. The gods of music have blessed us with much to discuss this week. Who have we been listening to, y'all? Before we get into what I've been watching nonstop, which is Black is King.
Nonstop, girl. Okay, well, we will get into that. But right now, I mean, I can't not mention Brandy's new album that I've been playing on absolute repeat.
Yes!
B7.
B7.
It's so good, bro. It's so amazing. It's just, I've never had a laughing attack to a name of a track, but her last track, Bye Bipolar, killed me. Absolutely killed me. Absolutely killed me. Baby Mama with Chance the Rapper. Chance needs to chill, but Baby Mama is a wonderful song. Borderline, beautiful track. Everything was just so wonderful. And I mean, Brandy has been making music since she came out of the womb, but watching her mature into this mother, woman, goddess that she is, I love this track, love this album, love everything about B7.
Also, I will say Bye Bipolar, which sounds like a gimmick track when you hear the title, is my favorite song on the album. It really is. She also has a very interesting history of being articulate and super explicit about things that are happening to her. She has a song, Ira, help me out here. I think it's on Aphrodisiac, where she talks specifically about whether or not she should stay in the music business and is just literally weighing the options. She's like, should I go?
Should I go is the name of the song.
Yeah, should I go?
Very The Clash. Very London Brandy Calling. Atlanta Calling.
It's her final track on Aphrodisiac as well.
Yes.
Listen, those final tracks on a Brandy album will give you something to chew on. I actually really, really enjoy B7, although I don't like the video for Borderline, where she is in like a psych ward, wrapped up in a straitjacket. I was like, this feels very TRL 2001.
Yes.
Drive Myself Crazy, NSYNC. That's what you're talking about.
I just don't know. I don't know how much I trust Brandy to handle issues like this in the way that like they need to be multifaceted and textured, but she did give the girls something to eat.
She gave us more than an amuse-bouche, okay? You know, there's an entree.
Padma, that is enough. Thank you.
What I really enjoyed, too, is just spending this week diving back into Brandy's discography. My best friend, who got me into Sufjan the past few weeks, I've been getting him into Brandy.
Yes.
This white-black trade-off.
I know, the Silk Road of music.
The color of friendship. because it was prompted, too, by remembering that old Solange tweet about Brandy. Do you remember them?
Maybe.
She was going off on white indie music critics, and she said,
right.
This was in 2013. She said, some of these music blogs could actually benefit from hiring people who really understand the culture of R&B to write about R&B.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you should really know about Brandy deep cuts before you give a grade or a score to any R&B artist.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 years later, she followed it up with, last few days has brought up so much emotion, recalling when it was made a joke by indie white guys that I brought up Brandy album cuts. When, to be honest, don't you ever dare speak that six-letter name without understanding the value. The blasphemy.
The blasphemy.
I mean, true. She is called in the game like the vocal Bible. Brandy is fantastic, and I included on the playlist the songs that you would know, like, you know, Best Friend, Almost Doesn't Count.
I Want to Be Down.
You know, but I also have, like, Where You Want to Be, you know, like, So Sick, Piano Man, you know, like, I've really been getting into 2011 this past week, that really underrated album of hers.
Yeah.
The one that has that meme of her on 106 in Park, where they give everyone in the audience a free album, and she says, but we need the audience to buy the album.
And she looks panicked, like this has all gone terribly wrong.
It's also been a joy having Moesha back on TV.
Oh, please, girl.
Yeah.
It hit Netflix, and I've been watching it, and if you haven't seen it, you should watch it and early keep it. I'll just say keep it to the very boomer mentality of older people complaining about young people watching like Moesha for the first time and pointing out that like there's fat phobic jokes in it, you know, like maybe there is some like misogyny in some of these jokes. I'm like, I promise people discovering Moesha is not going to ruin the show for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just revel in the fact that we're getting anti Cheryl Lee Ralph back in the conversation, you know?
Please, please. Also, she ruined her own show. Sorry, spoiler alert. The last season, Cheryl Lee Ralph left because Brandy and her mom got executive producer control of the show, and then they introduced a plot line where Frank, the dad, had a son out of wedlock from his previous marriage, and Ray J played that kid, and Cheryl Lee Ralph reportedly hated that storyline and what they did to that character in the family, that she's only recurring in the final season.
Upsetting.
You know too much, first of all. Yeah, right. You know too much. You really, truly know too much.
Call me a Hitchcock film.
The only film he remade, yes.
I will never underestimate what the Norwoods have done for every facet of pop culture, whether it's music, TV, just absolutely obsessed.
Ray J and Kim Kardashian.
Ray J.
Like, the Norwoods are the blueprint
of everything
for pop culture.
Kings of the porn industry, of every industry. And I also frustrating that people would go on Twitter and warn us about, like, warn younger generations who maybe didn't grow up seeing Moesha as if we don't have a context of the times. And it just kind of inflates this idea that we are just exaggerating our issues with real problems in writing and pop culture.
If anything, we're smarter than, like, say, that Gone with the Wind conversation. People, yeah, like, needing a disclaimer before watching a movie like that and knowing, like, oh, this movie's racist. Like, we can watch back and know some of these jokes and things are, like, fucked up, but we can also still enjoy it and keep it moving.
I'm going to say, we're still watching Friends, right?
Right.
They got it.
Yeah. Right.
I just want to add also that when I was in high school, the big Brandy song was What About, yeah, which is one of the few songs I can think of that I thought was so annoying, and then I heard it enough times and then it became good. That's my feeling about that song. Mm.
I will also point out that when you play What About now, it sounds completely modern.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
in a way
I
that
agree.
It sounded annoying and like electronic back then, but now it sounds exactly where music sort of went, and I feel like she anticipated a lot of stuff like that. I mean, Aphrodisiac, a perfect album, has like Coldplay samples, and then she has her other song, mm-hmm, I Tried, where she mentions Coldplay, and I credit Brandy with me becoming a Coldplay fan.
Yeah, speaking of indie white men, maybe some do like Brandy. Yeah, I've just, Brandy, growing up, I would play her out. Like, my mother would be sick of her. Just me trying to get all the little runs and try and make myself sound exactly like Brandy. She really is, like we said, the vocal Bible. Like, I studied her bibliomantically every day. Even today, I don't really go nowhere without playing I Wanna Be Down. Because every day, bitch, I wanna be down. I wanna go.
The feel of that song, I mean, that's just, it's an era of R&B I miss, you know, like Back and Forth by Aaliyah, that kind of like easy party. I just really enjoy that.
Yeah, kickback R&B music. Mm-hmm. Like right now, R&B music is, I mean, it's still great. Like, you know, Kalani's album, Jhené Aiko's album, you know, but those are more chill and
ethereal, fairy.
Yes, there's like a transcendent quality to the relaxing
yes-ness
of it. Yeah.
Lexapro music.
Give me warmth. Yeah. Sometimes I don't want to be sedated. Come on.
That's your book. Here we go.
Executive producer Aida and author.
Beyonce, I'm coming for the crown.
Yes. Well, speaking of Beyonce, you know, she did drop Black is King, the visual album to The Gift, her Lion King compilation soundtrack. And, you know, it is her and a bunch of African artists on it. If you remember when it dropped, she's only on a few of the songs and is really sort of just like highlighting different artists from Africa. And it was in conjunction with the release of The Lion King. And we sort of just thought it was, oh, here's just an album from B, you know. But now here comes this whole visual component to it. And I really enjoyed it. I will actually say that it is not Lemonade for me.
Oh, yeah. So, it is not Lemonade.
My enjoyment of it is much lower.
That I understand.
To be honest. But I did enjoy it.
If only because Lemonade prepared you for what this is. Like, we already know what a visual album looks like from her now. And this is basically, if you had it described to you, you could kind of guess what it would be. It really is highlighting a lot of different African artists. It really has the majesty of a live-action Lion King in certain ways. Like, just looking at water, for example. You know, just like, mm-hmm. there's like a lot of moody, atmospheric, nature-looking things going on. That said, Lemonade was also very intent on giving you the songs. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's not really a standout track here.
Yeah, I would say if I had to pick one, it's Brown Skin Girl. Mm. But other than that, here's what I think about Black is King. Y'all know I was excited. We talked about it a couple weeks ago on Keep It, and I probably broke my Apple TV remote trying to play it when Disney Plus actually put it up. But I think, girl, it does too much. It does too much.
It does.
Too many visuals, too many sequins. Don't know what the hell it's supposed to be about. I know what it's about in its essence.
It's about the Lion King.
Yes.
But it's also muddled.
Very much so.
Throughout the entire thing, I kept being like, is she alive? Is she dead? Like, what is the story narratively?
Is the baby Moses? What it, like, they needed like a story editor, someone to just like, this is how we get from A to B. Mm-hmm. But great gowns. Great gowns, true. A lot of it, too, is imagery that we're not familiar with because it's from Yoruba culture or it's Nigerian culture. And a lot of it is Easter eggs. So I'm going to have to go back and watch it a million times to understand how she's subverting all this imagery and trying to make strong claims. But it's not readily visible when I watch Black is King the first time.
Yeah. What I would actually say is, unfortunately, I don't feel like there's much subversion going on in Black is King, actually. I feel like it is, you know, a beautiful adornment in a rich tapestry of cultures. Although it was pointed out that a lot of the designers are white.
Knew it.
Unfortunately. that was in the New York Times piece on it. But I would say that a lot of it is just, you know, like, repurposing this idea of, you know, like, inherited royalty for Black people. You know, that's a thing that's also on the song Crown, I believe, on Magna Carta, Holy Grail of Jay-Z's, which is then repurposed onto Beyonce's Flawless. It's the idea that, you know, like, Black people were descended from kings and queens, you know, and, like, slavery and the diaspora ripped so much of this lineage from us. And Damon Young from Very Smart Brothers, like, sort of articulated how I've always felt about that in a piece recently, just this idea that, like, listen, we didn't all come from royalty.
Exactly, exactly.
All right? Like, just statistically speaking, we did not.
If you put the chart together.
Nor did we all come from Africa. Like, this very specific.
Yeah, also the fact that, like, do we want to have all come from royalty? Because royalty in general is just not really a good thing, you know, and it's not merit-based, it's birth-based, and, you know, it's like, maybe there were some good people in the context of rule, but, you know, like...
Girl, we know Jay-Z.
For the most part, people of the ruling class were probably not great.
Surely, and, like, we know Jay-Z's a hotep. We know that about him. Like, that's undeniable. And I think that the only thing that I was saying when I think that it subverted some imagery, there was a very specific song, and this is, again, speaks to the problem about Black is King. I don't know what the song is called, but it's the one where they're celebrating black hair and they have black men in the old constitutional wigs that were worn by the judges in, like, American Revolution times. And that's the only time that I think that she was really very easily trying to get at something that I felt like I could grasp at. But other than that,
I can also say Brown Skin Girl too, you know, because that has the cotillions, which is very reminiscent of Jack and Jill, which historically, especially if you read Margot Jefferson's Negroland, historically has just been sort of about, like, black people who could pass the paper bag test. You know, if we're really sort of highlighting Brown Skin Girl, you know, with that imagery is also a subversion. But, you know, I mean, like, a lot of the other stuff was just, like, adornment in high fashion. And, you know, like Mood Forever, one of my favorites of it, is, you know, like, this mansion. And, you know, it's got this, like, 1940s-style swimming scene. And, you know, like, old Hollywood.
Yeah.
I'm like, that is great. And I also loved Power. I will say the one thing that she really did is introducing me to new artists.
Yeah,
which is the point of this.
It's very about decentering her, herself.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I had never really listened to Yemi Alade before, and I love listening to her music now. You know, I was introduced to her on No Jealous Me and Power. And that, I think, if the intent is to introduce her audience of black listeners to other artists from Africa, you know, like this Nigerian artist, like I think then her job was done.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have that personal story intent that Lemonade had, and honestly that Homecoming had, which I think was actually, I love even more than Lemonade, you know, because Homecoming is a narrative of the concert, but also what it took to get her to there, and so it had a built-in narrative. This one felt a lot like Life is Beautiful, which I felt like was a documentary that was also muddled,
mm-hmm.
And sort of a mess. We can fully admit that now.
One thing I will say about it being having some personal moments is when she brought in Kelly Rowland, and it wasn't just like, here's Kelly Rowland, but here's basically a tribute to Kelly Rowland. That I thought was very, very cool. Loved seeing, of course, Lupita. Imagine Lupita not like being radiant in something like
Naomi.
This.
Naomi.
Yes, Naomi.
And Blue Ivy is here. She is grown and ready to go and ready to perform. Like, she is here. I'm very excited about it all.
I would say the only thing that quote unquote took me out of it was that I don't find the movie The Lion King to be wise. So when there are like snippets from the movie, I'm not taking much from it, especially when out of nowhere I hear Billy Eichner's voice in the <I'll say. laughs> Billy Eichner took me out of Black as King. I'll say. That's a man I gossip with about Ava Gardner, and here he is now, Black as King.
Yeah, the snippets of Lion King were really not it for me, and I get that it is a Disney production, and is, you know, I get that, you know, like she was probably given all this money to make Black as King, you know, because of this Lion King connection, but the Lion King stuff takes me out of it. Also, just like sort of Lemonade, she uses Warsan's poetry again, mm-hmm. but it also just didn't really fit for me in this story the way that it did in Lemonade.
Yeah.
You know, it felt more personal in Lemonade.
I really feel like Black as King did what it needed to do within the confines of what she was given and what she was intending to do.
Yeah.
But I have to mention the no name of it all, only because there is this strange thing that's occurring now in an effort to find our roots and to understand blackness. All the black rich people are like Mansa Musa-fying themselves and trying to Africanize themselves beyond what I think is comfortable to watch. It is very ironic for me to see Black as King that has themes about water and how rich Africa is. And in that same night, I'm trying to WhatsApp my cousins in Africa to make sure that their dictator has plumbing on in the country. That, you know, like there are so many. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting that Disney Plus isn't offered in Africa. Who's going to see that? Who's going to see that over there? Wi-Fi is scarce. There are so many contradictions that are inherent in making this thing at all. But I understand in that same vain that I'm happy it was made, and I'm happy that a lot of black women and little black girls get to see how beautiful and how beautifully done that this project is.
My also response to that, though, of the no name of it all, is like, we're sort of in this place, you know, where everyone wants to, yes, you know, like black wealth just is capitalism, you know, like black wealth isn't liberation, these sort of conversations. But I also like would say that that's a lot of things in just popular culture in general, and there's always this like nagging sense of like focusing on Beyonce, which I think No Name does too much, to be honest. And when hip hop culture in general and so many other things like are about the propagation of wealth, you know, like you can listen to any sort of song and it's about like, even a Megan song, you know, it's about like my bank account, you know, things like that, you know, it's like that's just the culture that we have inherited within that music that some people subvert and some people don't. And I just think that there's a way to spread the wealth in the criticism that isn't always focused on Beyonce.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also say that I've always enjoyed when she does that in a sense, because the thing that I enjoyed the most about Beyonce projects is when she sort of subverts gender and has like her King Bee personality, you know, like when she had Bowed Down and stuff. It was like her existing in this male dominated world and giving you some sort of gender flipped resonance. Unfortunately, there's not really much of that in this because it's Disney and it's fitting the Lion King story. It's very patriarchal in nature, which that is also what I found a little disappointing.
And by the way, you are on record as saying you don't like the song If I Were a Boy, but you are right about that, so I'm going to allow you to keep that.
It's a bad song! all right, when we're back, Bob the Drag Queen. Our guest today is a champion, a comedian, and an activist. And after winning season 8 of Drag Race, is now on the Emmy-nominated and recently renewed We're Here on HBO. Hi, Bob the Drag Queen.
Hi, how are you?
We're good. It's so great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Bob, I was saying at the beginning of the podcast that you were one of the few drag queens who on RuPaul's Drag Race who, from the minute you stepped on, the comedy was so in place and so did not need to, quote unquote, mature. Like, you just kept it up throughout the entire season. And I always wonder if you were self-conscious of the fact that, I feel like a winning narrative on Drag Race is always that you really saw the improvement from week to week, when in fact you were just so consistent. Did you ever worry, like, oh, I have to, like, make a show of, quote unquote, getting better at what I'm doing?
I always tell people, if you're going to do a competition, the best thing you can do, especially if it's on TV, is just try to win and try to play with integrity. Mm-hmm. But if you try to, like, create a story or emulate something you've seen already, you're really going to have a hard time or a rude awakening.
Wendy Pepper, season 1 of Project Runway, that was her downfall as far as I'm concerned. Thank you for putting your finger on it.
You know what?
Not Wendy.
Someone had to say it. Calling out Wendy Pepper right now. This is the podcast is going to bring down Wendy Pepper. She deserves it.
And by the way, she passed away. So I'm like, I'm not upending anything. Yes.
Attacking dead people, Lewis.
Really fighting the good fight. And, you know, we got some. We're coming after Dave Thomas next. I got a bone to pick about my spicy chicken sandwich, Dave.
The crazy thing about Dave Thomas is that he had other daughters, but only one that he named a restaurant chain after. It concerns me.
We don't know about Wendy's chicken sandwiches are famous, but we don't know much about Amanda's much less popular chicken pot pie company.
Right.
Because people weren't interested in those. And then his son Brandon had a burrito company. Right. That no one, Brandon's and Amanda's did not thrive, but Wendy, she came through.
Mm-hmm. You know, chicken pot pies are just really hard to, like, get through the drive-thru.
Right. It's shaky.
Exactly.
Right. Think of the consistency of one. Yes.
I understand. And his wife had a whole sheet cake. It was a whole thing, the whole family. Wendy came through, though. I'm proud of Wendy.
The thing I would say I really also enjoy about We're Here, which we talked about on the show recently, the idea that it is expanding this narrative of queer stories that are on TV very interesting, watching it in contrast to, say, like, a Queer Eye, which has been about, historically from the original Queer Eye, just, like, showing straight people, you know, like, this is what queer people can be like and what they can do for you, and they can also help, you know, you design your kitchen. But this has been you all finding queer people in small towns who are living lives not dissimilar from the ones that we have in bigger cities, but they got some other shit going on, you know? Like, they're walking past Trump-Pence signs, you know?
Yeah, and Confederate flags and all that stuff. And there's no shade to Queer Eye. I think Queer Eye, especially Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, the original, was a landmark show for queers and really helped people see queers for who we are. And I thank Carson Kressley and the entire cast and Jay and everyone for that show all the time, because it quite frankly paved the way for shows that tell queer stories like RuPaul's Drag Race, like We're Here, like Pose. I believe that show helped with the queer show that tell queer storylines.
No, it reminds me a lot of when I think Joe Biden had mentioned that it was watching Will and Grace that sort of, like, helped people around him sort of, like, realize, oh, gay people, like, they're real people, you know, that and queer coming into people's homes.
I mean, if that's real to them, then that's real to them. You know what I mean? If that's their truth, then that's their truth, honey. And I'm here to say Will and Grace didn't do that for you. I know I love Will and Grace as a child. I know that I related to Will and Grace with friends at school, and my mom would watch it together with me.
So when you're going into these towns and you're meeting queer people who are, you know, like, in these small towns where they're dealing with all of that stuff, what is that like, even addressing, you know, someone who you're like, yes, this person, like, maybe likes the same pop culture as me, maybe has the same conversations with their friends. I think there was that one episode too where that kid who was having the trouble with his mom was really sort of like kikiing with like his black gay friend there too and the other queer friends at that one restaurant. And it was just like seeing how...
Oh, it was in Louisiana, Ruston, Louisiana. It was Shangela's prison. It was Jose.
Yeah, it was nice seeing, you know, like these communities that are existing in these other cities. But, you know, like how do you even go in and approach like talking to someone first, just when you're first meeting these people on the show?
I mean, there's, I don't know that there's a whole science to it. I just kind of introduce myself the way I would introduce myself to anyone. I would just say, hi, how are you? My name's Bob. And then I talk about what we're doing here. And that time I was working with Stacy, who is a former firefighter, like a retired firefighter. And I don't overcomplicate it. I just say hi and introduce myself. I think that's where you have an opportunity to really get in your head too much, because a lot of people think that we're going to these towns to help people. Like our goal is to go in and like help these people, but it's really just to uplift their voices so they can continue helping their communities. It's not about us, these Hollywood saviors, coming in and saving this town. It's just about us relating to people who have something in common with us and amplifying their voices.
One thing that the show dives into, obviously, lightly, is a lot of the political stuff that goes on, you know, in these cities. How do you feel, you know, as a queen now, especially in a world where, you know, we are asking more people in pop culture to be more politically knowledgeable, specifically drag queens? You know, I feel like black ones, you know, obviously are always talking about these things, but, you know, how has it been for you navigating this as someone who's come from Drag Race?
Well, I mean, I've always been political with my drag, so that doesn't seem new to me. I do think that people are waking up, becoming more woke to a lot of the injustices that their fellow citizens go through every single day. And I think that what's happening is, like, once the sheet's pulled away, you can't put it back. You know what I mean? People are seeing things for the first time. And I think people who, like, have been political for a long time, the reason why they've been political for so long is because they know they've seen too much and now they can't go back to ignoring things.
What's your favorite way about the show has evolved or maybe hasn't evolved?
I wish that we could see a bigger diversity across the gender spectrum in its casting. I am not interested in also in joining in the erasure of all the amazing trans people and non-binary people who have been on RuPaul's Drag Race, because we have some amazing people like Stacey Lane Matthews, Peppermint, Jiggly Caliente, Kenya Michaels, some really amazing trans women also, as well as non-binary people, myself, Shea Coulee, Sasha Velour, Aja, across the gender spectrum. So there has been that, and I don't want to engage in that erasure, but I wish that the stigma wasn't on the brand in general. I'm really excited to see that some of the things that people have come to with concerns have been addressed. You know, when they changed the ooh girl, she got shemale. I'm glad that's not still there, and I would like to see more of that.
You brought up Peppermint, and you two, you know, have your show together, which I really enjoyed watching. And then you've obviously had viral moments, you know, like the fracking joke moment between you two. But, like, have people reached out who maybe are other queens asking, like, maybe how they can get involved recently or just, like, better ways that they can be allies to other black queens who've been on the show? Because I feel like talking about the pulling back, people are starting to realize, you know, that like the fan base even treats black and white queens differently.
There was a moment maybe in the 2 weeks following George Floyd's death where I was getting a call or text per day asking me what to do. And I was like, this is too much. It was like, I can't tell every white person what to do, how to solve their. I was like, at some point, y'all are going to have to do research. You're going to have to, because I can't. I literally can't even. So, yeah, lots of folks have been reaching out asking what to do. And I was like, the thing is, you know. You just want me to tell you.
Yeah, that's been one of the whole things about this current era. You know, obviously, there are people whose job it is to enlighten people. I've always said that, you know, like on this show, when we talk about issues, you know, I'm saying it because I want people to learn something. But there's also people who just don't know that we all have the same Google, you know?
Yeah, true.
Are there things that don't get into the episode on We Are Here that obviously you're fitting it into just an hour's show, but what hits the cutting room floor that you wish got into the show more, if anything?
I mean, we shoot for 9 days, and we do a one-hour episode, so most of the stuff is on the cutting room floor. I don't remember missing anything, being like, oh, why didn't they show that? In the first episode, we shot for 15 days. It was our pilot. Mm. So we did so much stuff that didn't make it in there. One of my favorite moments was we went to this, you know, a living historian. There are these people who like kind of live like they did back in the days.
Oh, yeah.
So there are these living historians, these ladies who run this house in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. We went in there, and there's like, if you go to one of these historical houses, you can like go in, but then there's like roped off right at the door. So you can't actually go in and touch stuff. So there's this one room that we go to, and the lady was like, we never do this, but we'll let you all see what's in here. So he undid the little velvet rope, and we all went in. We went around. And then the first stop, she goes, and this quilt is about 200 years old. Mm. It is the pride and joy of our establishment, and we cannot believe that we are the ones lucky enough to have it. And we all just keep walking, except Shangela. Shangela stays back, and she's admiring this quilt. And we're all looking at something else, like a chair or a table. And then behind us, we just hear... And we're like, what? What? And Shangela has knocked down this 200-year-old quilt after the ladies made such a big deal of how like remarkable and delicate it was. And for the rest of the tour, I was just like mortified is the only word I can use to describe how I felt. Mortified. Mortified.
What the fuck did she do? I don't, like, throw herself at it?
According to her, all she did was touch it. But none of us were looking. It was just Shangela. So according to Shangela, all she did was like, first of all, why would you even touch this? The lady said it was hundreds of years old. Why are you touching this lady's quilt? That was wild.
That is like the people who have the need to touch a thing in a museum. I've never gotten it.
Well, I will say that what I do have a need in the museum is if you go to the Met, when you get close to a piece, it goes beep. Not yes. If you just get too close, it goes beep. And I remember being in the Met thinking to myself, like, I want to get beeped once. I want to just be beeped at least one time while I'm here. And I got beeped twice, so I felt pretty good.
I've never beeped, I don't think, but I've definitely had the ones where like the security guards are like extra watchful and you're looking at something and they're like, hey.
I love that. I'm like, into
I'm
that.
I'm not Pierce Brosnan. I'm not here to steal a painting.
I think I got beeped on a Georgia O'Keeffe.
If it was a Georgia O'Keeffe cow skull, it should have mooed when you got close to it.
It should have, but it was one of the vaginal paintings.
Love those. Love those. I feel like I did not know what they were in school, but I'm from Milwaukee, and like there were constant in like my elementary school, like paintings of like Georgia O'Keeffe's around.
They're like, well, Ira, this is one of our amazing pussy paintings we have on our wall.
You know how there's Reed posters in most high schools? We have Georgia O'Keeffe posters that just say pussy on them.
Pussy posters.
But speaking of museums and shit, like, you are a person who is, for most people, part of their pop culture, you know? Like, we watched you on the show. When we think about culture and things we watch, like, you were heavily involved in it. What is the stuff that you like to consume? Like, what feeds you where you're like, this Girl. Is art that's inspiring me? Or stuff that you like to watch that you're just like, whatever, it's just me watching this on Saturday.
And I love art, but I love, like, trash and stuff, too. Like, recently, I've been really obsessed with this series, this genre of YouTube, and it's YouTubers doing videos about other YouTubers, and I cannot stop watching them. One of my favorite challenges is this kid named Premink, and Premink never shows his face, and he just does videos about other YouTubers, specifically if they're problematic or if they have it out with their fans, and I don't know. It's just so intriguing to me. Like, I'm obsessed with it. I watch hours. And these videos are like 40 minutes long, and I watched like 3 in a row. They're great.
We talked about one recently, like Who? Tati Westbrook Do you know her?
Do I know Tati? Listen.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, I actually don't watch the videos of the YouTubers. I only watch the videos about the YouTubers, if that makes any sense. So I'm not really familiar with Tati Westbrook's work. I'm just familiar with her drama because I was so intrigued by this whole James Charles thing and how in the beginning he was really not doing well. But who would have predicted that a year later he would come out smelling like fucking roses? Like, who would have assumed that he could be deep in all this shit and come out smelling like fucking Estee Lauder perfume, you know?
No, I totally agree, by the way. Like, I don't think I could sit through a Tati Westbrook video or whatever, but underneath that video, every time are like 50-minute responses that are like meticulously crafted, seemingly by like somebody who understands television. Like, they know I'm continuing to pay attention, even though I don't literally know who she is. It's shocking.
That's what
world.
It is. It's so interesting. But these documentaries, these little documentaries or these little tell-alls, they tell you who they are and then tell you why they are how they are. So you get the whole, it's like watching Feud. You don't have to actually watch every single Joan Crawford and Betty Davis movie. But if you watch Feud, you get caught up real quick in like 8 episodes.
So people should watch Feud for Judy Davis. Yes.
Well, also, what's her name who just passed away? Olivia de Havilland, who passed away at 104 anyway. Well, I mean, she's not in it, but it's about her. Anyway, I also, outside of the smut, I do really get interested in watching documentaries, and I've been intrigued. I think that either Netflix and Hulu and all those things either know that I'm watching, or they're just all pushing their black social awareness content to the front, because it's always there for me, and I watch all of it. Like, I watch all of it. 13th is still my favorite one. Also, have you seen When They See Us?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that When They See Us did not sweep the Emmy Awards last year is the oddest thing it is probably one of the best scripted shows I've seen ever. Top three, for sure.
Well, the title, I guess, was appropriate.
Right.
They have not seen it yet. When They See Us.
We're going to get the Emmys.
Then it'll get some late Emmys.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it's brilliant. And there's two Ava DuVernay picks that I've just called up now, so.
Oh, right, yeah. I think 13th is my favorite thing she's done. I didn't watch all of When They See Us, but 13th is also, like, the most information per minute in a documentary maybe ever, and you can consume it. Like, it works out that way, yeah.
Lewis, you have to go finish When They See Us. It's only 4 episodes. You have to finish.
No, I watched, like, the first episode, yeah. I love Jarrell Jerome, right? Yeah,
he's, oh, my God, you don't even know. You don't even know. You don't even know, because that, once they get to the girl... Ooh, girl, that fucking, I think the third one gets you together.
And Niecy Nash in it is.
Niecy fucking, and John Leguizamo, and Isis King is so good.
Mm-hmm. All faves. So I'm going to make sure Lewis watches When They See Us. I will harass him each week.
Though now you just mentioned Niecy Nash, and I feel like rewatching Getting On, which is one of the weirdest TV shows that ever existed and amazing.
I didn't see that one. But listen, Lewis, you and I will get together on a Zoom.
All right. Oh good. A curated
a
Zoom sesh. Yes.
I think I might start doing like monthly Black History movie and television, like a big Zoom party where people join us once a month to learn about like Black classics, but also the terrible ones too. Not just like The Color Purples and The Beloveds, but we're going to watch Soul Plane.
Please, love a Soul Plane moment.
Do you know what is one of the craziest Black movies that I feel like people nowadays have not seen that goes underestimated in terms of its insanity is Mahogany.
Oh, Mahogany is wonderful. Oh, Mahogany is such a... Diana Ross is so great in that movie. But yeah, that's a... I'm also going to watch... have people watch Harlem Nights, which is... If you ever want to see Eddie Murphy in a fight scene with Della Reese, then...
I read my mind.
I love Harlem Nights. Harlem Nights is a classic for me.
Oh, and now you're going to shoot me in my pinky toe. It's one of my favorite lines.
And I would have people watch Vampire in Brooklyn.
Oh.
Classic.
You know, the scene where he walks into the church? And,
yeah.
And he starts smoking. And he goes, God damn! And then everyone just turns around because his pastor yelled, God damn. And then he goes, God damn anyone who doesn't come outside. Praise the Lord.
One of my more embarrassing moments on this show is Angela Bassett was on, and I told her, I love Vampire in Brooklyn. And her initial facial reaction was to look at me like, okay.
Why does she do
like,
that?
I meant it though. I meant it though.
Why does she look at you like that?
Because I feel like people don't tell her that often. I feel like people aren't going around telling Angela like Vampire in Brooklyn is it.
Well, folks are probably telling Angela Bassett they love What's Love. She probably gets What's Love Got to Do with It more than anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe a little Music of the Heart from people right? who look like me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I saw Angela Bassett. I met Angela Bassett. That kind of met her before I was on Drag Race. I did watch Happens Live and Angela Bassett, Kathy Bates, and a few other people from American Horror Story were there as well. Mm. And Angela Bassett is like, Angela Bassett looks science fiction young, to quote First Wives Club. It's bananas.
No, it's like she has that Death Becomes Her potion.
For real.
Like, looks flawless, smells moisturized.
It doesn't make sense. She has a jar of like sad child tears in her basement that she drinks every morning. She has to.
If you haven't seen it, you need to watch this interview of her. I think it's when she was doing Mission Impossible. She's asked about her workout regimen, and it's one of my favorite videos that has ever been seen.
Work.
Because they ask what she eats and like what she does, and she goes on this whole like thing about how like doesn't do yoga. She eats like Ezekiel bread. She talks about when she does her weight training. Like, it is phenomenal.
She lies. She's Bassett like, diet. I won't tell you the truth. I drink orphan blood twice a day. I pray to Satan to maintain my youth and beauty. And then I sleep upside down like a bat in my mansion. It wakes up like Nosferatu every morning.
Vampire in Brooklyn was a documentary.
Exactly.
That's what it was, actually.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, thank you for being here, Bob.
Oh, before you go, I'll tell you one quick story, which it kind of rivals that one. So, do you know Mateo Lane? He's a dear friend of mine. He's a popular queer comedian. He's one of my best friends. And he was on the red carpet for like Divas, VH1's Divas, and Vanessa Williams came up to him. And he said to her, like, oh my God, I really love your Christmas album. And she goes, well, what's your favorite song? And he goes, I can't remember something. He was like, Little Drummer Boy. And she was like, I didn't sing Little Drummer Boy. he goes, yes, you did. And she was like, no, I did not. And he was like, you sang Little Drummer Boy. And she was like, under no circumstances. So he's having this really intense moment with Vanessa Williams. But then he later found out, obviously, he was mistaken. He was thinking of someone else.
Whoa. But, I did not expect that. Yeah.
But imagine you look at, like, imagine you have Angela Bassett on your show and you accidentally say something like, oh, I loved you in the movie Rat Race. And she's like, I wasn't in Rat Race. And like the chills that must run through your body.
Also, the best Vanessa Redgrave track is Comfort Zone. He should have known that from the start. Come on.
Vanessa Redgrave.
Oh, Vanessa Williams. See, now I'm in on it.
See, now you're on Vanessa Williams shit list too. Vanessa Williams is never gonna do this fucking podcast. Sorry.
She gonna pull out that knife. Like
oh, and that
it's off.
I love Vanessa Williams.
She's great.
I saw her live once. If you go see her live, she kept mentioning that she went to Syracuse. Like, she kept mentioning, like, over and over and over again that she went to Syracuse. Like, it was like Yale. Like, she was like, well, when I was at Syracuse, and I was like, girl, it's Syracuse. Like, why do you keep going on about Syracuse? It's so weird. Like, she was like, well, I went to Harvard. I was like, all right, go on. Whatever you're proud of, sis, go on.
All right. Thank you so much, Bob.
My pleasure. I'm glad we had that Vanessa Williams Kiki at the end. Y'all be safe.
Well, she gonna have some trouble dancing her way out of this one.
Girl, not dancing. Not dancing her way out of this one.
Also, the idea of literally dancing your way out of something, truly. Like out a door.
Shuffle.
Drop Can't Stop the Feeling and watch and watch Ellen jitterbug away from.
I cannot believe.
the news this week, because BuzzFeed News last week published their second story in a month about rampant abuse and misconduct at Ellen DeGeneres' immensely popular talk show. These stories were shocking to absolutely no one at all, because we've heard many stories about her attitude and poor treatment of those beneath her and people who work with her. But these reports are very interesting in that they weren't just reports of, you know, her being, like, mean to someone, right? Like, yeah. That old report we heard of, like, her not being nice to a security guard. These were reports of Black people at work saying that they faced just sort of like racial insensitivity and microaggressions. And then there are also reports about sexual misconduct from producers of hers with other employees. So seems like we got some real stuff going on here.
I was going to say the first time there was an expose about like behind the scenes stuff, I mean, the racial stuff alone was horrifying, gross, that anybody, and especially in an environment where you're putting together a comedy, like who wants to put together like a cheery show when you're dealing with that? It makes it impossible to do your job, I think. That initial piece also pointed out to me how hard it is to identify toxicity in a work environment, because it wasn't all coming from Ellen. It was kind of coming from producers. You know, are you corroborating this with other people? Do you have to? It just, to me, I felt for the people articulating what the problem was. Because that's, I work on a talk show myself. And if, for instance, I think I knew who in HR I would be able to go to, but it seemed like these people were confused about what even to do. And I was so thankful they had a reporter to report it to.
Yeah. There's something to me that's so eerily suspicious about, and I get that it's daytime TV, but maintaining that level of like jubilant all day, every day, and then me, I have to believe that you go home and are not a horrible person, or you to your staff, you're not a horrible person. It's just odd to me. And there is also a level of how long has Ellen been doing this? For decades. There is an exhaustion, and she's Ellen just needs to go. I'm not justifying her behavior. I'm just saying that it's suspicious. This is very suspect. Very suspect. And then fee-fi-fo-fum, hear Portia come talking about, I stand by Ellen. We know you stand by Ellen, girl. You sleep by Ellen. Like, that's just lesbian redundance.
Oh, God. Portia de Rossi.
The redundance, bro.
Also, her Instagram post about it also had a horrible font. With just this, like, blue background and the words, I stand by Ellen, written. And then, like, these hashtags, I stand by Ellen, I stand with Ellen DeGeneres. Hashtag stop bot attacks, as if Ellen is being attacked by just bots.
What?
That was bewildering. That was a crazy response. Yeah. And also, by the way, I just want to point out an additional strange thing. When I went to Portia de Rossi's Instagram, her official description says former actress. I did not know that. I thought she was still among us doing her thing. I loved her on Better Off Ted. I do believe it's a loss.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then also there's that odd thing that happened with Katy Perry where she defended her.
Today, yes. This morning, Katy Perry is like, I can't speak to these stories, but Ellen has always been very nice to me.
You don't say.
Yeah, girl.
What? And even right
Wouldn't
now.
Wouldn't it be weird if she weren't? Yeah.
Yeah.
Kevin Hart is tweeting the same shit. And it's like, do you guys not understand that like murderers have friends?
Of course, Kevin Hart chimed in, because I would say that part of this problem is the fact that she's come out to say nothing about the fact that employees have said that they were subjected to racist remarks like, I'm sorry, I only know the names of the white people who work here, or the fact that people were fired after taking medical leave or bereavement to attend family funerals, or that one of her EPs, Kevin Lehman, you know, was accused by 36 former employees of asking if he could give them hand jobs or oral sex or grabbing PA's penises or groping production's assistants, you know, like, she has not really responded to any of this except for like just been hearing light Daily Mail stories, which who knows if you can believe that about maybe she'd want to walk away. And it is so telling, because if you recall that Kevin Hart situation was people reasonably being mad about him, you know, having homophobic jokes and simply wanting him to apologize for it. And he didn't apologize for it. And that's why he ended up not hosting the Oscars. But then he went on Ellen's show and they had this whole like rich famous people sit down that was basically a conversation about like, why should you have to apologize for anything? That was the thrust of it, right? So here you have a situation that now involves her. She doesn't want to apologize or even address it, seemingly. And it's, I think it's really shitty thing to do, you know? And I think it probably is a sign that those stories about her are true. And I say sign, like I know they aren't fucking true. Like
yeah, they, so yeah.
You know, we all have friends who have worked on Ellen.
Actually, we do.
Something did bother me about before BuzzFeed got into the picture, before it became an official news story. I do think there's something strange about posting a tweet to the world that's like, well, we all know how bad Ellen is, and then expecting strangers to chime in and fill in the blanks for everybody. Because, by the way, I will just say, in recent history, there was a similar line of Twitter-based revolt against a celebrity, which often ends up being necessary. Not saying it's 100% a bad thing. One of the people who wrote a long response about how this one particular celebrity was terrible to them, I personally watched that celebrity get fired from a TV show for treating the host terribly. So it's not like everybody who's ever responded to this is necessarily, it's not vetted, is all I can say. Like, we're treating this like Yahoo Answers, and it's actually a serious story, you know? So just, I really appreciate when it becomes actual news that's been vetted and reported. Mm-hmm. I also want to say about Twitter's response to this, there's been a lot of talk about who might quote-unquote replace Ellen. It's a syndicated show. I don't know if there'd be technically a replacement, but people have been pretty facile about who will replace Ellen. And I just want to say, it is never in doubt that Ellen is phenomenally talented. Mm. So I just want to say, like, the hundreds of thousands of responses, as if anybody can sit in a chair and do it, it is a grueling job. Ellen has the particular gift of being able to tell jokes in very few words with timing that is always surprising. Mm-hmm. Like even at its most basic, I do have to say I fucking laugh. She really has a gift for saying something strange and having like a quirky timing response that really takes me off guard and makes me laugh. So I just want to say, let's talk about who's going to replace her if in fact she leaves the show, but it's a serious talent level she has. And I don't mean to paper over she's treated people, if in fact.
No, of course. Yeah.
But in fact, she actually is, I think it was just announced this morning that she is coming back to host the 18th season after we get coronavirus figured out. So it might not even be a conversation that we have. And it's actually unfortunate that the BuzzFeed article and all the things that are coming out really did zilch to affect what was going to happen in the upcoming season.
Well, I mean, she'll talk about it the way that she talked about the George Bush thing, right? You know, being like, I'm friends with people across the aisle, you know, like really talking around it. I will say one of the wilder things about this, and maybe this is getting to what Portia was talking about with the hashtag bot attacks. She unfortunately happens to be one of the people involved in the insane QAnon conspiracy.
Oh, girl, I'm trying not to talk about it, but let's go.
I know, but it's like QAnon is this insane cult conspiracy of these people online who believe that there are a lot of high-profile celebrities who are doing, like, sex trafficking of minors. Like, Pizzagate was a thing that originated from it, and Donald Trump is going to save the world. Listen, there is plenty of reading that you could do on this. There's one piece of writing in The Atlantic that I would point you to. It's called The Prophecies of QAnon. That sort of like spelled out the whole cultist nature of that whole conspiracy theory for me. But Ellen is one of these celebrities at the center of it. And so a lot of the responses too are people being like, yeah, you know, take her down for like sex trafficking. And I'm like, those are being mixed in with the people talking about legitimate concerns. So that is insane to me. But I think that Ellen is also smart enough to know that this entire thing is not being propagated by QAnon, you know? Mm-hmm.
I would fucking think, my God.
But you can read that article or you can DM me. I am a new recent Pizzagator, and I do entertain the conspiracies, mostly for entertainment, but they're kind of fun. So DM me.
Aida!
Q Aida.
Not you going Tracy Letts is bug
I'm
on
gone.
Us right now,
girl.
Okay?
Girl, I'm gone. Come through. DMs is open.
When we're back, keep it. And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode. It is Keep It. Who's going first? We'll let Lewis go first. It's his birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Mine's going to be quaint and birthday themed this week, which is keep it to however I inherited the idea that your 20s are the best time of your life. I just want to say that I'm 34. First of all, my life is basically no different than when I was in my 20s. And also, my life is better. I don't know where that comes from. Like, if you're in your 20s, that's the only time you can be cast as a female lead in a Transformers movie. I don't know. Like, I don't know what values we're propagating, espousing in that scenario. But I personally, in my experience, I don't think there's been a moment where life hasn't gotten better. I really, truly enjoy my friendships in my 30s. I enjoy having an actual ton of experience, both professionally and just, you know, emotionally now. It's a lovely time. I really recommend everybody getting older. I enjoy it. Nothing has changed for me. I still have really good vision, by the way. Isn't that weird? I don't wear any glasses whatsoever. You wouldn't pick that for me, would you? Anyway, that's my keep it this week.
Happy birthday, Louis. Keep it to youth. I understand. I love that. I can't wait to age and mature and like a fine wine, a Pinot Noir of sorts.
I hope I turn exactly into, you know, Jeremy Irons, the same neck, the same accent. I want it all.
Well, okay, my keep it this week goes to someone who I feel like I'm consistently fed up with all the time. And at this point, I don't care. I don't care, and I don't like her, and I want that to be known. I'm fed up. I'm at my wit's end. This is a grown woman. Doja Cat, I'm sick of you. It's over. Like, honey.
Why are you tired of her now, girl?
I know, but I've been holding out, Ira. I've been holding out because she's done hella sick. Like, every week it's a new Doja Cat thing that I have to listen to and deal with. And this week, Doja Cat has coronavirus.
Really? Now, I didn't know that.
Yes.
I thought Doja she recovered by now.
She's recovered, but honey, you should have kept that little positive reading to yourself, because now I'm mocking you. It's done. And I'm mocking her only because I remember at the top of this quarantine, at the top of the pandemic, Doja Cat was on live talking about it's just a flu. It doesn't matter. Like, drink some NyQuil, go to bed, you're going to be fine. Now look at you. Now look at you, Doja Cat. You have coronavirus. Like, that is just cosmically hilarious. And I'm sorry. And I'll add it to the Rolodex of fuck shit that Doja Cat has been on. And look, I wish Moo never dropped. That's it. I mean that. So go ahead and cough your way to your little white supremacist tiny chats. Have fun.
She should be glad she's not laying there next to Herman Cain.
Well, Herman Cain, okay. Doesn't that story feel like a distant memory already? And it's like, and it's bewilderingly, shockingly, insane, terrible.
Yes. Even wilder that he was fully laying up in a hospital bed, dying of coronavirus, and his team was sending out tweets still being like, the Democrats are evil.
Right. You're dying.
You're literally on your deathbed. Oh, my God.
Unthinkably awful. Unthinkable.
It's just the wild part of Republicans always claiming that people are trying to politicize death, like that semen jackal Tucker Carlson
right, yeah.
did when he was talking about Obama politicizing John Lewis's death at his funeral, which, wow, imagine politicizing the death of a civil rights leader.
This is supposed to be for everybody.
You know, and it's like, y'all were letting this black man die and still using his Twitter account to try and push out your racist-ass message. Fuck all the way off.
Tucker Carlson and his fucking Orville Redenbacher-ass fashion can fuck off. I never want to hear that name again. Ugh.
Well, you know what? Doja Cat does still continue to do what she needs to do on tracks like City Girls' Pussy Talk, which was truly my jam, Aida. I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah. I mean, listen, Say So. Look, Say So is amazing.
Doja In Your really, Eyes remix at the weekend.
She's a beat machine. She's a songwriter, but she can go ahead and enter the ranks of the 500,000 cases that we have of coronavirus. Enjoy that. Hold True. That.
And we've gotten to mention it on the show yet, but, you know, like, you can trade in some Doja Cat listening for Flo Milli's album, which is
Please,
truly it.
Our queen, Flo Sendent. Flo
Walk around Sendent. Like that bitch.
Hey, by the way, we're also allegedly getting new Robin, too. Isn't this such a crazy time for dance music? Like, every gay icon is turning. I truly expect, like, Judy Garland featuring Aaliyah to happen any second.
I'm going to pass on that one.
Featuring Aretha. You think it won't. Yeah.
My keep it this week is to keep it regular at this point, Terry Crews.
A legend of this genre, yes.
Our house nigga.
The people who are in constant rotation on this show, it's very funny because I feel like that week we were talking about Connie and Joe Kennedy in the same week and someone mm-hmm. else, a fan of the show tweeted at us that they started going back and listening to old episodes of Keep It. And they were like, there's literally one of our first 10 episodes, like a 2018 Keep It, where we are talking about Kanye and Joe Kennedy.
Oh, wow. What's wrong with us?
It's yeah. like the exact same topics from that episode were the topics of the 2018 episode.
Wow.
Truly, it's them. It has nothing to do with you guys or us. It's them. They're consistently doing stupid shit.
So speaking of consistently doing stupid shit, Terry Crews responded to the fact that Gabrielle Union was on Jemele Hill's podcast, Unbothered. That is the name of Jemele's new podcast. And side note, I am bothered that Gabrielle has not been on Keep It yet. But
how about it?
But anyway, she was on talking about America's Got Talent. And, you know, the interest in the conversation was being renewed just because, you know, all this Ellen stuff going on, you know, and all of the current stuff talking about just dealing with racial issues in Hollywood in the workplace. And Gabrielle was just like, people hit me up all day long and are like, what's happening? And she says the only thing she knows for sure is that Terry Crews still gets 3 checks from NBC. You know, like she pointed out that he definitely was not an ally for her on the show mm-hmm. and with everything that she went through, which, as we know, was being let go from America's Got Talent for speaking up about racism that was happening behind the scenes on the show. He tweeted out, this will be my third public apology to Gabrielle Union. If a fourth is needed, I will continue to apologize and push for reconciliation between the world and, more importantly, the culture I grew up in. I'm sorry, Gabrielle Union. This man, first of all, Terry Crews's Twitter mentions have become like the hottest new club for racist white people.
Oh,
you cannot go through this man's mentions without now seeing like the kind of white people who love a good Negro responding like, thank you so much, Terry, you know, for like trying to stop racism and trying to stop divide us, et cetera. Like the kind of white people with dogs as their Twitter avatar or a poorly lit selfie in their car.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll do it a fourth time if I need to. How about you just apologize correctly? Because he hasn't apologized for what he's actually done. He keeps being like, I'm sorry, and I'm trying to be better to you, you know, black people to black people. It's like, do you know what you're apologizing for? I don't think you do, because he continues talking about what he thinks black supremacy is, right? Like, he tweeted about black supremacy because he thinks that black supremacy is this new idea that is black people wanting, you know, to not be shot at by the police and to be treated with dignity as human beings is somehow going to put us above white people. And we need to worry about, I don't know, holding hands across fucking America.
Yeah, that is too bad. Also, just like bringing up the amount of times you've apologized to Gabrielle Union, it's like, are you trying to throw detractors her way? I mean, just don't do it. Who cares if it's the third or fourth time or whatever? She's not a historically wrong person. So, I mean, that seems a little petty to me.
Yeah, every time he speaks, it's always laced with an attitude, like the self-righteousness. What, you've done nothing, Terry. You've literally done absolutely nothing. And I will stand by Gabrielle until I die because we're both Nebraska girls.
Oh, is she a Nebraska person?
I only get her. Of course. Yeah, she's my only one. It's Amber Ruffin, me, and Gabrielle Union. That's it.
I mean, the power of three will set us free, okay? Where's that Charmed reboot? The one thing Terry did do is, first of all, I have this nigga blocked, so I like rarely see his tweets. But
Terry, who
truly, he gave me a birthday gift last week because on my birthday he tweeted, "Conquer our own negativity," which is an acronym for coon.
I got it.
Because people have been calling him that in the mentions. And he wrote, "Conquer our own negativity."
An acrostic. He made an acrostic poem just so that we'd stop calling him a coon. Are you kidding me?
The Riddler's like, I'm going to step away from that one.
Oh my God. The man has too much time. He has too much time.
Truly. Can they go back to filming Brooklyn Nine-Nine or whatever? Give them some Corona swabs. Get him on set.
Please. Can't he just go eat like 7 rotisserie chickens and stop tweeting?
I will never get over the support we used to have for this man. You talk about repeat keep it guests. We talked heavily about him last year and his own issues, you know.
Former game show host. I hate to see it. You know what I mean?
That's the ultimate betrayal for Lewis.
Anyway, that's our show. Thank you to Bob the Drag Queen for joining us. Once again, happy birthday, Lewis Vertel.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. I have a blast on this show with you two. And by the way, thank you, Keep It people who have tweeted to me. So appreciated. Listen to some Carpenters. I'm wearing a Carpenter shirt for, can you believe it, the millionth time. I'm shocked also. Oh, and I'm also
Lewis
on a podcast.
Vertel.
I'm on a podcast called For the Girls about gay men and their divas. And I talk about Karen Carpenter if you want extra Vertel goodness this week.
Is she promoting another podcast?
But it's... I think,
I'm kidding. Yeah. No, I intend
to queer,
it
damn
myself.
It. Yeah.
All right, we'll see you next week. Keep It is a production of Crooked Media. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our editor is Bill Lance, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Our digital team is Nadine Mokonian and Milo Kent. Thank you to Brian Sebel for production support every week.